Welcome to the Wide for the Win podcast. Our goal at Wide for the Win is to help authors grow publishing success across multiple platforms and formats through education, training, support, and community. If you're interested in reaching readers around the world, diversifying your income as an author, and exploring the freedom of living a truly indie author life, you've come to the right place. Hello, and welcome to the Wide for the Win Wide Stream. My name is Mark Leslie Lefebvre, and in with me, who's normally not here for the lives, because normally you're in a different time zone. It would be like midnight for you, but you're in the U.S. You're in one of the U.S. time zones right now, right? Bradley, sure.
Yeah. I'm in California, so West Pacific time zone.
All right, and we're going to get to hang out together at Author Nation next week, right?
I know. I'm looking forward to it. That's one of the reasons I'm here.
Really, you and myself and several other board members invite for the win. So that's really exciting. But today we're here to talk about the topic of writing through adversity. So there are times when things are dark, when things are terrifying, when you're frightened, when you're anxious, when you just can't go on potentially. It may be personal things that happen in your life. It may be some large event that may have recently happened that's impacting you, not only because potentially you're fearful for people that you love or you care about, or even yourself. And we're writers. So one of the things that we thought would be important to talk about is writing through adversity and some of the strategies that writers may potentially use. Now, Bradley, I didn't share this with you earlier, but I saw this quote from Toni Morrison come up, and I thought, what a perfect quote. I think about stuff like this. So Toni Morrison said, "This is precisely the time when artists go to work. There is no time for despair, no place for self-pity, no need for silence, no room for fear. We speak, we write, we do language. That is how civilizations heal. I know the world is bruised and bleeding, and though it is important not to ignore it, not to ignore its pain, it is also critical to refuse to succumb to its malevolence. Like failure, chaos contains information that can lead to knowledge, even wisdom, like art." And I do fully believe in what Toni Morrison says. And I think we, as storytellers, as writers, are needed.
Yeah. Because we're the ones, I mean, I often look at it as consuming or creating. And consuming is easy, frankly. You know, watch Netflix or read or anything where you are taking in something, a story or information. It's easy, right. It's passive. Whereas creating, and that's what we as artists do, as creators, I like to use the word create, because I see it even beyond writing, right? Okay. And also, I have a podcast. Here we are. We're not writing. Mark and I are not sitting here writing.
We're creating.
We're creating. We are. But we really are. We're not watching this thing. We're doing this thing. We're making this thing. And that, right. I think, is what, you know, a lot of people, they just don't have it, or they feel that they don't have it. But frankly, in my humble opinion, they do have it. It's not a matter of, oh, I'm going to create this thing and it's going to be this masterpiece. No, that's not at all it. It's that we consume and we take it in and we need to let it out.
Right.
Especially if we're taking in, especially adverse or negative bad stuff, it's kind of like a car or a drain or anything that takes something in and then lets it out. Or frankly, not to get too gross, but like the human body. I mean, we eat. If we just ate all the time and never, you know, let it out, then...
I saw that Monty Python sketch. No, but that's right. Yeah, you take it in and you don't release it. I mean, writing for me, I write horror. I've often said that I was like, but you're scared of the dark. You're afraid of the monster under the bed. You're afraid of the boogeyman. And I think I try to channel them. So one of the things I try to do is well, yes, I'm frightened of these things. And potentially it's therapy. Potentially I'm writing to try to control that horror. to trying to steer it in different directions. And here's the one thing I remember. I was talking to Kevin Anderson about this on a similar live stream back during the pandemic. This is why do we write horror? Why do we write these things? He says, well, two reasons. A, like a roller coaster, sometimes it can give you that thrill. But unlike reality, unlike, you know, being in a potential, like a car that's swerving out of control on the highway, where you actually could die, you can close the book and feel safe. Or as a writer, because again, that's consumer aspect. Right. As a writer, you can control that good triumphs over evil. Right. So that the malicious evil forces that, you know, Lord of the Rings or whatever, that they can actually be defeated in this fiction, because they can't always be defeated in real life.
Yeah. We were talking about that earlier today, when, especially when the something is out there, is third party or external, or extrinsic, and we can't do anything about it. Or sometimes worse, we feel like we can't do anything about it. Yeah. Maybe we've tried to do something about it, but we couldn't, or we thought we did, but we didn't do enough. You get into the whole dilemma where you say, you know what, it's done. And what can, you know, and there's this great thing it talks about, you know, self-help, or this is egotistical if I think of myself. But when we're good, you know, then and only then can we be good for others. So it's like the oxygen mask dropping. We have to sort of save ourselves before we can go save others.
Yeah, no, I like that. Again, that self-care is really important. I mean, the other bit of advice is make sure you take care of yourself first, or better yet, treat yourself with the same respect that you meant to treat people that you care about and love, because oftentimes we'll put them first and neglect ourselves. And I mean, that happens a lot, where I see particularly people who have very nurturing personalities, as they tend to take care of everyone else first and forget to nurture themselves.
Empath. I've recently been a good friend of mine's. I kind of got it finally when she would use the word empath, but it'd been passing, and I didn't really get it. And then I really experienced it with her when she would see other people, and she would really not only just see them and say like, "Oh, that person." She said she felt the feelings the others were feeling, or at least that's how she felt. And so there's a kid crying or whatever. She feels it, like, wow, that's I didn't understand that. That was okay. So you can protect yourself against that as well.
Yeah, as well. And I do love the idea of being able to control my fears, control my anxieties, and here's the other thing. Again, because I write in the speculative genres, I'm always going to use examples from that realm. But one of the things about science fiction is we can explore concepts in science fiction that aren't necessarily going to bring readers' defenses up in terms of saying, "Oh, you're talking about me, or you're talking about our society now." No, I'm talking about this. Yeah. You know, Star Trek, and they've encountered this alien race in which blah 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 blah. So you can kind of put it over there, and when you put it over there, it's the same thing when we're trying to look at ourselves, look at our writing, right? You put your writing over there so someone else, an editor, can help you make it better. The same thing, you put the concepts over here and separate them from yourself so you can analyze them and maybe even understand some of the emotions and stuff like that too.
Nice. Oh, I like that.
Well, again, come on, science fiction, right? A mirror held up to reality, but allows you to see yourself in different ways. And when you look at different, you know, think about Dune, for example, right? One of the greatest science fictions of all time. It's like controlling the spice. What is the spice, right? And there's so many different things it can be. It's a drug. It's gold. It's all those things all merged. It's like Herbert took them all, just jammed them all into one like big, powerful thing. And so, but again, it's talking in different societies that they have on these planets, and the different the clash of the different empires trying to control the spice. We had there's some comments here. I'm not let's see. Oh, yep, there we go. So, Susie, hey Susie, spec fiction genres are so good for exploring the broader human, social, and cultural experiences. Sci-fi, fantasy, magical realism, horror. And thank you for that, Susie. Can I bring up a comment that our colleague Paul Arduin actually sent? earlier today, not being able to be part of this, but wanted to share this for dealing with adversity. And so Paul says, this won't work for everyone, but if I'm dealing with adversity or anxiety, sometimes I'll make a ridiculously insane goal to distract myself from the thing that I'm worried about. This is especially good for me if I can't do anything about the problem, like you said, Bradley. For example, I recently was very worried about a situation with my grown daughter that I couldn't do anything about. I set myself a pretty insane goal on the weekend of writing 20,000 words on a weekend, 20,000 words.
Wow.
And I focused almost my entire energy on completing that goal. It successfully kept me from spiraling during the weekend. So that's a really interesting strategy that Paul recommends. Is kind of like, okay, I'm just going to do, I normally, like, maybe Paul writes 5,000. I'm going to guess 5,000 words on a weekend. I'm just assuming my own writing speed.
Yeah.
You know, that's the full weekend, right? But then 20,000 is like, okay, let's get at her. What do you think about something like that?
I like it. I like it because I love how people have different perspectives. I kind of do an opposite technique because that one is big and huge. And to spin that on a positive, with a positive rant, I would say, yes, go for the big one because you're not going to get bored. You're going to go all the way. Let's get to 20,000. Go, keep it going. And I'm keeping myself busy and I'm not thinking about that thing anymore. And I'm busy. So, and I like that. The only downside I could see is, oh wow, it's such a mountain to ascend. You know, will I ever make it? And maybe you fall off. So I tend to go the other way. I like tiny little goals that, because I'm big on the ideas of starting and finishing.
Right.
So I think, especially as a creator, I start a gazillion things, but then I don't necessarily finish a gazillion things. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, but there's some kind of even adrenaline and a sense of accomplishment and success and confidence building when you finish something. So I think both could work, and it's just, and neither is better than the other, but just take your flavor and go have some little thing that you can accomplish, and you have an accomplishable goal. I mean, right. Maybe it's 1,000 words. You're really down, you're like, I can't write one word. Right. Go for 1,000, go for it, finish it, succeed. Revel in your success, celebrate your success, and then ideally at that point, maybe you've moved a level up from the doldrums down where you were just existing, and you've brought yourself up through your own creating. So I think they both could work. Go for the really tiny thing, or like Paul is talking about, that big, massive, scary thing.
I love that because it's a reminder that there's no one solution, right? Everyone has their own way of doing it. Yes, the big thing can keep you focused and that focus may be so critical just to keep you from meandering, right? I know, for example, in the mornings, I often will not look at my email. I will not look at social media before I get the writing done, because I know myself and I know that I'm probably going to get all distracted and squirrel my way out of getting any work done. So that focus for me is important. But similarly, I guess I can see the benefit, maybe depending on the mood I'm in or whatever.
Yeah.
Finishing something, Bradley, you have that like book in the weekend, but it's like this really short thing. It's not this unreachable goal. It's like a thing you can just get done. And I think, that satisfaction of actually accomplishing something and go, oh, look, I needed to go from here to here and I made it. And I'm going to get there, or something comes up and I failed. So that's quite interesting. Yeah.
And check out Susie's comments here too. She's saying to combine them, and use like this Bradley tiny stuff to get to the Paul big stuff. I like that. That's great.
Yeah. So it's almost like, is this the one you meant? In contrast to Paul's suggestion, I'll offer a breadcrumb. So just 10 minutes of brainstorming, just 100 words, just 10 more minutes. Just 100 more words. So again, you get the best. Yeah, I love that. I love that. That is so amazing. Yeah. Susie also says, totally agree. Small wins build positive momentum. Bradley's small wins can build up to Paul's big win. So you can actually do both. It's like the writing sprint, right? So it's kind of like, I'm going to get this done, but I'm going to do it in 10 or 20, or usually a 20-minute writing sprint or something.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to get up and get my coffee. I'm going to stretch my legs. I'm going to let the dog out. whatever it is. So you can actually accomplish it without burning yourself out.
Yeah. You know, on this note, I'd like to make a comment about, I talk a lot about energy and how I think there are some sort of counterintuitive ideas about energy. And so, for example, like I have teenage boys, and for them, they're like, I'm feeling so lethargic, you know, I'm not kidding. They're like, let's eat some junk food and sit on the couch and watch Netflix, right? Mm-hmm. Even any of those will probably, and they don't understand this, right? Because they're teenage boys, and it will either want any of those will reduce your energy. Where and then they do all threes. It's just like it's just bad. And so, and this is the counterintuitive part. I mean, it's just like if you're feeling sluggish and you go run around the block 10 times, it builds up your energy. Whereas like intuitively you would think, no, wait a minute, I would be tired from that, right?
Yes.
And just like the boys, you know, the junk food, the Netflix, the couch, all three of those are bad. If you take the inverse of any of those, you know, go outside, move, and then we're back to the idea of not consuming, watching the Netflix, but creating, which you would think intuitively, that's going to cost me energy. That's kind of like brain power and creative power. And this is the weird part. And it's just like the same way that it seems weird that I go run around the block and that brings up my energy levels. Wait a minute, what? I'm running. I should be tired, right? Yeah, yes. You might be physically tired, but it's going to increase your sort of almost emotional or psychological or sort of physiological energy levels, which are then going to bring up your other levels.
So it's so funny because I was at CanCon, Canadian Content of Society of Speculative Fiction or Literature in Canada. It was a conference in Ottawa, Ontario. So good 6-hour drive for me. And I drove back Monday morning and I had work I needed to get done. So I got up early and I drove back and I had work. I did run the weekly indie author bestseller list for Drafted Digital that gets sent off to various places. Yeah. And then there was more analytics I needed to do looking at the spreadsheet of data, because it was kind of like analytics of what's working, because I love learning that to share with authors. And my partner Liz sent a text saying, hey, you know, if you have no meetings this afternoon, do you want to play squash today at 3:20 instead of 4:20 or 3:40 instead of 4:20 or whatever the time we normally would play at? And I was just wanting to take a nap. I'm like, I'm just so exhausted. I think I'm just going to call it quits. I'm just going to go sleep for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
But interestingly enough, I went and played squash with Liz. And just that movement, just that action, and just that interaction with someone who I enjoy spending time with. And
yeah.
I mean, I came back, I did some of the analytics. I did some other work, some other writing. And I normally don't do writing projects in the evening. But I came back from that just energized, like you said. So that physical, and it was kind of like my choices were have a nap, call it quits, or go and do something with someone I really enjoy doing something. And getting that energy back. Even now, like just before we did the live, I'm sitting at my desk, I'm working on some stuff, and I'm like, oh, I have to go be live. Oh, suddenly, I mean, I'm at a standing desk, so that helps. But now thinking about writing, sharing tips on writing. Oh my God, I'm so energized right now. I've got, I'm gonna go build something.
right.
create.
Yeah. You know, and like right now, like I'm super jet lagged, but I just got to the States 2-3 days ago, 9 hours difference. I'm waking up at 2-3 a.m, you know? And so like right now it's early afternoon. I'm feeling it. I'm tired.
Yeah.
But my sister wants to go on a walk on the beach. And I'm like, yes, I feel like I want to have a nap. That's what's going to rejuvenate me. But I know it. I know it. Like intellectually, I know it. If I go outside with her and have a walk, that will make me feel better. But similarly, and I know we're writers and we're talking to creators here, and our audience listening is probably writers or thinking about writing or potentially a writer or potentially a creator. And this is where I also say, I'm sorry, dear audience, you are all creators. It's just a matter of whether or not you allow yourself to create something. So knowing that, and the next time you're feeling sluggish or blah, 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 and you just like, oh, I'm just gonna chill and, you know, watch Netflix. So I shouldn't bash Netflix. I love Netflix, but
watch. I mean, maybe it's Paramount Plus. Maybe it's
exactly. Yeah, I shouldn't just single them out.
You're the thing in couch potato.
yes.
Or rutabaga. We're not prejudiced against potatoes. I love potatoes.
That was rutabaga. I've never heard that. And if you're thinking of, or I'm feeling like, I have a pretty strict rules with myself. I don't really create past, I don't know, 2, 3 p.m. because I know myself and I know my creative energies are in the morning. And especially just like you also said, no social media, no junk, no whatever. My best stuff is going to be as early, I don't mean necessarily early according to the clock, but early according to my inner clock. As to the closest I am to sort of dream state. And that's when, for me, the real good stuff comes up.
Yeah.
So that's, and also when you know yourself and you know your body, and if you're, and again, because we're talking through about adversity, I know this seems kind of maybe weird, but maybe people can relate, but my confidence levels decrease as the afternoon goes on.
Really?
And so I know this, and it helps if you consciously learn things about yourself. And I know that I shouldn't start new projects. I shouldn't think about, great new ideas, because I'll think they're stupid. And I do more admin work or marketing work, right, or something less creative side of the brain, because I'm going to doubt myself.
Yeah.
So writing through adversity, we're talking here, if you learn to know your sort of body clock and your creative clock, yeah, and when things work best for you, and be good to yourself.
Yeah.
If I started a writing project at whatever 8, 9 p.m., right, I'd be a mess. I'd be a wreck. It'd be terrible. I'd be frustrated. Like, oh, yeah, I can't do anything. I'm stupid. I'm terrible. I'm that, whatever. So I just know, nope. I talk about, I'm here. It sounds like I'm bashing consuming. I don't mean that at all. I mean more because we do need the intake. So
right,
go watch that Netflix in the afternoon or evening or night. But then I do want to have the daily creation or, right, the exhaust as well.
Well, yeah, it's like you're saying, you're wanting to match your what you know about your body, your mind,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Your circadian rhythms, all those things.
Yes.
Trying to match it to the input and the output and all those things.
Yeah.
Because yeah, when they're mismatched, or when you try to follow the advice that, well, this works for someone else, and that may not work for you, that's
exactly
where the stress can be even harder on you. So it was like, yes, yeah, but Mark said, do this. No. This is what,
right,
Mark does, because Mark listens to his body.
Yeah.
Bradley listens to his body as well. I think that's, yeah, that's a really important element. I know the other thing that helps me is helping other people. I mean, it's why Wide for the Win, right? Wide for the Win. I mean,
yeah,
I'd be way better off just focusing on my writing and just getting more writing done. But
yeah,
I've been in the industry for over 35 years. I've seen,
yeah,
the ins and outs. I've seen the trials and tribulations. And I know that there's so many predators out there preying on writers. I want to invest my time and energy in helping other authors. I'm going to give a personal example. A few years ago, I was slated to be at a conference. And one of the main keynote speakers for that Saturday, the conference,
yeah,
had something come up and had to bail at the last minute. So about a week before the conference, the organizers contacted me and said, hey, I've seen you on stage. I know you can do this last minute. Would you be able to step in and do Saturday's keynote?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, of course. I understand the bind you're in. Of course, I've got this covered. What's the theme? What's the topic? I'll be there. I've got you. Don't worry. My mom died just 2 days before the conference. And
oh, wow.
And it wasn't completely unexpected, but it wasn't expected. So it happened.
Yeah.
And that was obviously very devastating for me. I happened to have been there with her when she died, because I was about to leave her and go to the conference and then come back and continue the caregiving and stuff that I was doing. So I was glad that I was there with her. So that was good. But she had deceased and there was nothing for me to do.
Yeah.
But there, wow, was someone and a group of people that needed something from me, that I could do something positive. And yes, I was wallowing in grief. And yes, it was hard. And yes, it was painful. But I actually know, knowing this about myself, I knew letting them down at the last minute would not be good. I would still be wallowing in guilt and then also feeling guilty about not helping them.
Yeah.
So I flew out to the conference. I gave it my best, because the other thing is I ended up channeling that energy into helping other people. And I thought, okay, if I can provide this, that helping other people gave me an intrinsic value and reward. And it's like, my mom would be proud of me that I used my abilities and my knowledge and my skills to help people. And again, would know, yes, I'm coming back to take care of things and all those things. Right. And yes, of course, then I will focus on it. But again, for me, I do get an intrinsic reward from those activities. So knowing that about myself now, if I'm the type of person who couldn't handle it, I think it would have been completely understandable. I reached out to the organizers. I said, you probably saw on social media this happened. Don't worry. I'm not going to leave you. I'm coming still. Everything's good. Don't worry about it. Because I didn't want them to feel bad or whatever, or have to scramble at the last minute. And I know not everyone has that in them, but I knew that about myself, knowing that I would feel even worse if I'd have two things to feel bad about. So at least I could feel good about this one thing. And again, maybe it was a distraction too, right? Sometimes you need a distraction. Oftentimes at sad or morose events, oftentimes that's where the weird humor comes out with family members and stuff like that. I was like, did you remember laughing at dad's funeral? Yeah. Why were we laughing? Well, we were remembering something funny he had done, that kind of thing, right?
Wow.
So, oh, this is an important one, right? From Susie, do you want to read it?
Yeah. So on the flip side of helping others, Susie's clearly paying attention to us. Aaron mentioned being vulnerable enough to ask for help when you need it, which is important because there are plenty of marks in the world happy to help.
Yeah.
Wow. So important. This is good.
And especially in this writing community, there's so many people who get you and understand you. So reach out for help. And here's the other thing, because social media can be a downward spiral, especially the doom scrolling and stuff like that. And I know we've said this before, but you know, maybe potentially now more than ever, with a whole bunch of people saying, I can't do this. I can't be on Facebook. I can't do whatever. I mean, if you're in the Facebook group on White for the Win, you just want to get writer stuff. And now you're getting all this other stuff. Now, fortunately, there's a lot of wonderful people who are posting pictures of their cats and stuff like that to make people smile. You go to Circle, you go to the Circle community for Wide for the Win, wideforthewin.com, and you can link to Circle from there. You don't have to deal with anything other than let's talk writing.
Yeah. You know, also related to what you said and then and what Susie said. So I also I'm a basketball coach as well as a writing and marketing coach, but the basketball coach, the clarity of some examples is really just amazing. So the boys, I teach like teenage boys, coach teenage boys, and not all of them, no, in fact, most of them won't ask for help. And so, but some of them, the rare ones that do, it's such a joy as a coach. I mean, those are my favorite players. The ones who ask me, I mean, because of course they're boys, they're teenagers, they think, oh, that's probably a sign of weakness, asking the coach for help. Hey coach, how do I do this? How do I do my, where do I put my elbow for my shot, right?
Yeah.
And the boys that asked me that, so here, if you're looking for help, number one, ask for it, and then try to keep in the back of your mind, like true teachers and true coaches, they just love it from their heart to want to help. And those are my favorite players, the ones who not only ask for the help, but I admire them for getting over that hurdle, even if it's like an unwritten hurdle of, oh, if I ask for help, I'm weak. Whereas I don't see that at all. I see the opposite. I see asking for help as a sign of strength, because you're showing your vulnerability and you're going to grow from it.
100%. I actually do see that. And I mean, on a similar light, I say this to authors when I'm at events and stuff like that. When people come up and approach me and ask questions or whatever, I will do everything I can to help you. And I'm so appreciative that you were brave enough to come ask me a question, because I'm too chicken to go over there. Right. So, yeah, I admire that. And yeah, the vulnerability of saying, you know what, I could use this advice. I could use a hug. I could use whatever, whatever it is. I guess I believe in the goodness of people. I believe in the goodness that if you do request something, usually the average person, if it's within their power to fill that void for you, to provide something, I think we are, as teachers, as mentors, as coaches, of course you're going to be there for you.
Yeah. And if they're not, they're not the kind of people you want to be dealing with anyway. If they're the kind who are, they're going to attack you because you're down, then you don't need them in your world anyway. I remember there was a great quote, a guy, Wayne Dyer, some people might know him. And he said he had a voice, he's kind of old school, and he had on his voice recording messaging machine, which tells you how old school he was.
Yeah, he's as old as I am.
Yeah, right, right. Me too. And he would say, he said, I'm working on myself. So he said, on the message machine, hey, thanks for calling you back. You are part of that change.
Okay. I like that.
I don't know if I cut out there. I seem to cut out.
It cut out a little bit, but And I've sold a lot of his books over the years as a bookseller too.
So basically he was saying, if you are not part of, you know, what's bringing me up in the world, then I don't, I mean, it's a little brutal, but we need to do it. Then if you're bringing me down, then I don't really need you or want you in my life.
Yeah.
I want people who are bringing me up because I want to go up. I want to go up too. And I also want to bring you up.
Yeah. I love that because we sometimes end up wasting a lot of resources and time on that wrong piece. And it's okay. We make mistakes. We all make mistakes. We all make errors. I think of it as stories. It's like, I tried. This story is not going to go anywhere. I'm going to now focus my energy on this other piece, this other thing that is actually working as well. Yeah. And that's okay. You're allowed to say, oh, wow, I made a mistake. I'm going to try again.
Right. Right.
As well. So any final thoughts as we've already hit half an hour.
You know, on that note, I lived in San Francisco for many years and we're very influenced through Silicon Valley and the pros and cons and whatever you think of Silicon Valley, but they have some really interesting and intriguing like, sort of business ideas. And one of those is fail fast, fail often.
Yeah.
And it's very much like what you just said. And I think as writers, so much of us suffer from procrastination based in perfectionism. Mm-hmm. And we're not even going to start. And it's kind of going back to the tiny win, right? The tiny success.
Yeah.
I want to start that tiny little project and I'm going to see quickly, is it a total bomb? Is it a failure? Because if so, I want to be done with it. That's where it's fail fast, fail often.
Yeah.
Or fail fast, exactly. Fail quickly, right? And so start that thing, see how it is, you know, start your short story, start your novel, start your book, whatever. If it's completely a total disaster, no worries, no harm done.
Yeah.
I think the worst case is you keep going on something that's terrible and you just drag it out because, oh, I started.
Yeah.
And you waste away kind of with the initial energy. Whereas maybe you should just chuck it and start on something new. So fail often.
Yeah. And similarly, if social media is getting you down or whatever, nobody says you have to be there. It's not actually going to help you sell books. It's not. We know that. So if it's taking you down, the wrong path, you can abandon it. Yeah. And you can return to it. A friend of mine who's been focusing on that in the last several years or so, when they need their fix, they will grab their partner's phone and go get their fix by specifically going to the places that bring them up.
Right.
Without having to go and do the scroll and hope for the dopamine rush. Right. And it just, they're just going and getting the elements that they want. And they've never been, more productive.
Yeah. On that note, if it were easy, everybody would do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Things exactly. Are hard. That's why we're creators.
Yeah, exactly. But also quit the things that aren't working. Better to quit and move on to something that might work. Well, Bradley, thank you so much. Yes. I get to see you in person next week, and we get to hang out this afternoon.
I know. Awesome. Wow. 2 for 1. We're even in a similar time zone.
Ooh, we're only 3 hours difference this time. That's the closest we've been in a long time. Awesome. Well, I look forward to seeing you. And thank you, everyone, for watching. Susie, thank you for the awesome comments. Thank you guys for watching. You can check out more. We do have the audio feed for this for the podcast, but come and check us out over at wideforthewin.com.
Great. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Wide for the Win podcast. For links to our Facebook and Circle groups and other helpful Wide publishing resources, go to wideforthewin.com. The music for this podcast, Sax and Rock and Roll, is written and performed by Kevin MacLeod and was licensed at incompetech.com.